Lowe. I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
Every episode, we invite a guest to talk about a Heat Rock, an album that just burns, baby burns. Mm-hmm. And today, we are going to be dialing it back, actually only just a couple years, to the 2016 surprise album from A Tribe Called Quest. We got it from here. Thank you for your service.
Recently on the internet, they chatting, taking posts, debating who can win in battle rapping. Let's make it happen. These cyberbugs already part. No subliminals with me. You know who the fuck you are. Who wants more? Ha ha. Well, here are Orthodox spitter or ring on a southpaw. No doubt I'ma set it.
When word got out in the summer of 2016 that there would be a new Tribe Called Quest album by the end of the year, I think the collective response was, wait, what?
Yeah.
After all, it had been 18 years since the group's last effort, the Love Movement, and they had famously split up amongst acrimony. And of course, core member Fife Dog had passed away in the spring of 2016 from complications related to diabetes. The idea that there would be a new Tribe album, 16 tracks long, no less, recorded in secret in the months before Fife's passing, well, that was a lot to take in. 2016, if you recall, and I think many of us don't have any trouble recalling this, it was a rough year in pop music, with David Bowie, Prince, George Michael, Sharon Jones, and of course Fife all being lost to us. Add in the presidential election, whose outcome was just a week before the Tribe album dropped. It was just a tough time, and once we got over the shock at knowing the album was imminent, the natural next question, tinged with a little bit of anxiety, was, would it be any good? Well, we needn't have worried, because we wouldn't be here talking about it today if the answer wasn't a definitive yes. As I wrote for NPR that November of 16, A Tribe Called Quest gave us the best of themselves a generation ago. They didn't owe us one last album, yet here it is, a parting gift, right when we needed it most.
We got it from here. Thank you for your service was the album pick of our guest today, Cristela Alonzo. Our guest today is hella funny. She is an LA-based comedian, made history as the first Latina to create, produce, and star in her own network sitcom for ABC. Salute. I had a chance to check out her special on Netflix, Lower Classy, and I got my laughs on. I appreciate that. Do yourself a favor and run that immediately. Her memoir, Music to My Years, a mixtape memoir of growing up and standing up, came out last year, and recently she has toured, is killing it across the country. She's a voice actress starring in The Laundromat, also Steven Soderbergh's thing. Please sit in with her as she stands before us talking about topics that are beautiful and beautifully uncomfortable. We are glad to have her with us. Welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you so much. I love being here.
Man, I got to thank you first for picking this album, because in prep for the chat, it forced me to sit with some feelings that I hadn't visited for a while. The first of which was guilt, because I didn't spend enough time with this album when it came out. As Oliver said in his beautiful introduction, there was a whole lot going on in 2016, and I was caught up in
absolutely
the mess of politics and other things going on in music and all the losses that he mentioned, that it just was just too much for me.
Yeah.
So you forced me to sit down with this album and not just revisit this album, but also Tribe in general. So I want to ask you first, before we get to this album, talk a little bit about your relationship with Tribe Called Quest.
So I'm a first generation Mexican American, and Spanish is my first language. So I learned English through pop culture. So I fell in love with Tribe, maybe I was in junior high, I think. I grew up in a border town in South Texas. So all of the pop culture we got was old. Everybody already experienced it, and we were just getting it. So for me, my mom used to listen to all of her music in Spanish. She never learned English. And some of her favorite songs in Spanish were called corridos. They're like ballads, right? And they tell the story and everything. And, you know, a lot of the songs that she loved were always about people struggling. And I grew up with that music, and I remember hearing Tribe, and it was so similar. And it was weird because I didn't know I wanted it. I didn't know that I was seeking it. But I don't know, there's some music out there that the moment you hear it, you think, where have you been? Mm. And it wasn't that that my neighborhood was just identical, that my life was identical, but it was so comforting to know that I wasn't the only one living in it. Mm-hmm. It had been 18 years. So you kind of forget, you know, it's like they're there and you think that the phase of your life with them has passed and it's nostalgic. I actually think that they came at the perfect time for me because I was really sad. 2016, during the election, on election night, I was on a cruise ship. I was like on a social justice cruise ship. So basically,
what is that?
Thank you, because I was gonna tell you.
Oh man, what is that?
So a lot of wealthy people have a boat, and they booked a bunch of people of color to go on the boat and teach them how to be people of color. Basically, like teach them about the struggles, you know. So basically, we had people from like Black Lives Matter saying, "Hey, we matter," and white people are like, "Are you sure?" Like, you know what I mean?
Right,
like
right.
That kind of thing, right?
Right.
Which is so weird. Now I was on the boat because one of my dearest friends and mentors is Dolores Huerta. So she had asked me to go on the boat to moderate a panel that she was doing. And then they asked me to moderate a panel with her and Sonia Sanchez. Mm. So immediately, yes, I had to say yes. I had never been on a cruise ship. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
I didn't, especially that's a different kind of cruise ship than normal.
Yeah.
So we were leaving Miami, but we had to get there the night before, which is election day. And the panel I did was to basically celebrate women. But all the questions were kind of framed as if Clinton was going to win.
Yeah, sure. Right.
So, you know.
We believed 538.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God.
Shout out Nate Silver.
Word up.
So,
word
you
up.
Know, that night. I went to dinner and I felt so out of place because they fit you anywhere you fit. It's only me. And I was placed in a situation where the conversation was so not my kind of conversation. And that already set the tone for the night later on, which I didn't realize.
Yeah.
And the election results come in. And as the results come in, first of all the people, there were probably like 30, 40 people of color that were in that room. And as the results came in, we actually, I think, accidentally started noticing that we were kind of
gelling up.
Yeah, we like an iceberg. Like we were just coming together.
Yeah.
It wasn't a conscious thing. And then when they announced that he had won, all of us that were gelled together lost it. The cruise hadn't even started yet. And here we were starting the cruise like this. And the next day, I have to go do this panel where none of the questions apply anymore. Mm. And I go into the green room and Dolores and Sonia Sanchez are talking to each other. And I come in and my eyes are swollen. And Dolores looks at me. She's like, "Hey, what's wrong with your face?"
Subtle.
Like in front of everybody too. Like,
damn,
you know,
damn, Dolores.
I know. And I was like, damn, I was trying to hide it. Don't call me out on it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like, well, I was crying. She's like, "Oh, I get it. This is the first time your country's broken your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry. It won't be the last." I'm on the boat for the next couple days. I was talking to my friend here in LA and we both, you know, tell each other about albums. And he's like, "Hey, A Tribe Called Quest dropped an album." And I was like, "What? Like, no way." And he's like, "You should listen to it.
Mm.
You need to listen to it."
Mm.
And I was like, "Okay." And I downloaded it when we were docked. And I listened to it nonstop for the next probably half a year.
Word to Viper, gonna bring it to the overlord. Drink a Cisco, chilling with the gold microphone cords. And we grip our balls every time we stuntin' on tour. Cause we never bore, responding to the ready crowds roar. And promoters try to hit us with the audible. We about our business, we not quitters, not bullshitters. We deliver, we go getters, don't be bitter. Cause we not just niggas.
Jerobe, my fire wolf into different cloth.
There were so many songs in that album that just screamed what I was feeling. And not only that, not even that, but was describing the people that get ignored. It changed my life. That album literally just made me take change. I mean, that song, We the People,
mm-hmm.
There's a lyric that talks about, like, basically, you know, it's like, Mexicans got to go, black people got to go, Muslims, gays, like, you know, the poor. Like, that song summed up for me what the election results had shown. And that broke my heart, but it also gave me salvation.
All you black folks, you must go. All you Mexicans, you must go. And all you poor folks, you must go. Muslims and gays, boy, we hate your ways.
Man, that is an album that gave me hope when I needed the hope.
In the smog of the media, the logs, false narratives of guys that came up against the odds. We're not just nigger rappers with the bars. It's kismet that we're cosmic with the stars. You bastards overlooking street art, better yet street smart, but you keep us off the chart. Some of the fucking numbers and your statisticians.
What was your reaction to it when you first heard it?
One was surprise.
Yeah.
You know, I thought I was tapped into the industry goings on, but I did not see this coming at all. I did not know they were dropping an album, so it caught me by surprise. 2016 was sadness from start to finish. And in between all the celebrity deaths, I had just started working on the first season of Dear White People.
Mm-hmm.
And we were dealing with controversy because the title was Dear White People. And white people were mad. They were like, nah, you know, we heard all the stuff, the vitriol. What if there was a Dear Black People? And we were like, that's not a thing. Okay, get up out of here with that. Hashtags, you know, boycott Netflix. We end season one. Season one of Dear White People, if you have not seen it, and I won't spoil it because you should just see the show. But it ends, it starts with a racial incident, and it ends with a racial incident. And no pressure, we got to end big. It's the end of the season, so we got to come up with a perfect song. No pressure. and so I pitched, I mean, we went through a lot of moments because the scene is like, it's very quiet. It's all the kids looking into the fourth wall. They're sitting in, you know, I guess the rec room of their dorm, and it's a very powerful moment. And I pitched Curtis Mayfield, We the People, who are darker than blue, right? Because it's everyone's, it's showing everyone's faces. There's many, you know, there's many shades of black folks and people of color in this shot, and I pitch this.
Pardon me, brother, while you stand in your glory. I know you won't mind if I tell the whole story.
The thing that you learn over time as a music supervisor is it isn't, the moment shouldn't be the best song, but the best song for the moment. And although I thought it was a good song, I thought this is something that a Gen Xer would like. But these kids are millennials, and you need to, they need to be able to speak truth to power. And so we ended up putting We the People, Tribe Called Quest, We the People. And that was sort of a, Justin and I talked about that, and I thought, now this makes perfect sense. It is today's version of We the People That Are Darker Than Blue. Perfect for the moment. A shout out to him for pushing that song. And I always, and so it led me down this road of this album. And I kept playing it over and over and over again. My reaction to the album then was, I mean, I didn't get into some of the other themes that we'll talk about in this conversation. But all I could think was, well, damn, if this is your swan song, what a way to go out. In 2016, I mean, the other artists in their peer group that had albums that I remember was Common, who had Black America, or Being Black in America, I think that was that album, and De La Soul, who had been gone for a while. And I thought, the elder statesmen of hip-hop have some things on their mind. If there was a time to have something on your mind, 2016 was it. So my feeling about the album was, well played, Tribe. Well played. You?
Well, yeah, I think as both of you are touching on, the time, the context in which the album comes out is impossible to remove from how we listen to it, right? And I was thinking about, I do remember in scattered memories listening to other Tribe albums. Like, I remember, for whatever reason, when I first got Low End Theory, and I might have mentioned this on the episode that we did about Low End with Mr. Porter, that I got it from Leopold's Records in Berkeley, got it on cassette, and I just remember listening to it inside of a bathroom stall in my dorm. This would have been, what, 91 or so. But I couldn't tell you what time of year that was, as opposed to, I know exactly when this album came out because of its timing the fact that it happened to come out, you know, around within days of the election, I'm going to assume that was purposeful, because certainly the content of the album suggests that, and Q-Tip has talked about this in interviews, you know, they were very aware of what was going on, you know, in the U.S. in terms of the election, all the lead up to it. So my guess is they timed it. Had the election gone in the other direction, I don't know how that would have changed the reception of it. But I think back to Cristela's point, like, it just felt like the album we needed at the point at which a lot of us felt really, really, really low.
Yep.
And so I think that more than anything is what sort of overwhelms my thoughts of the album in terms of that timing, what it meant then. We can get into this discussion in a moment. I think when you try to divorce and just talk about the album on its own merits, I think some things shift with it. And like I said, we can get into those elements of it. But back to the original question here, again, the reaction to it has everything to do with when the album comes out. And I think, you know, it'll be indelible for me for that reason, because it was the first thing I started listening to heavily. You know, after those results came out, and it's like, I needed this. I needed something.
In the church of Busta Rhymes, it's my sermon you get it. Horizontal spitting, I'm the exorcist of your witness.
Don't interrupt me, nigga.
Sorry, that's a sin unforgiven. Like how we be skipping on bees like cooking crack in the kitchen.
Just start the pack and dry it, bag up the wet. This mad city's not a game. Easy, quiet on set. Fire student of the pack.
Did you know that it was going to come out? Did you know they were dropped? Did you have any hints that an album was coming? Because
yeah,
I didn't know.
No, okay. They did announce. They announced it, I think, earlier in the summer, or maybe it might have been in the spring. I want to say it was probably after Fife had passed that they had put together a full album when he was still alive. And the only reason I remember this is that when that new initial press release came out, I immediately shot a note to my editor at NPR saying, dibs. Like, I don't want someone else to review. Like, I want dibs on this. I better be first to ask for it.
Right,
you
right.
know? So that's the only reason I even remember knowing that it was coming, is because of that. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention, too, is that, was it 2016, late 2016, or might have been, maybe it was 2016, but I went to FYF Festival, and it was a great festival. Might have been 2017, but the openers were Missy Elliott and Bjork. You know, they're going big, you know what I mean? So my friend was like, you want to go? I was like, would you be? Get out of here. Of course I want to go. Silly questions. She's a Capricorn. But Bjork and Missy, and they had some big ones. They had Little Dragon. They had Iggy Pop was there. And I mean, just everybody. Moses Sumney, like everybody big. They covered every basis. And they also had Tribe Called Quest. And just hearing them perform their songs without Fife was a moment that it was so real. Not first of all, not seeing him up there, because I had VIP. This is a humble brag, but I was in VIP, so I was up close, and it was weird not seeing him. Mm-hmm. But it felt differently in prep for this chat, listening to him be so sparsely present on the album, because I just remembered like that I didn't pay attention to that the first time.
Right.
So there was a lot of guilt listening to this now, like, why didn't I pay attention? Why didn't I pay attention to this? And I think there were so many things going on. But we can get into this later, because I think what this album represents to me is also wisdom. Mm-hmm. And I think there is some wisdom. Oliver talks a lot about sequencing. I think there's wisdom in the sequencing.
Oh, totally.
Oh, absolutely.
In the sequencing of this album, and wisdom in the places where Fife is used and how he is used.
I remember seeing Tribe perform without Fife that year. And was it the Grammys, I think,
yeah,
where I love that they just hold their fists up when Fife comes on. And
yeah,
that right there, there's just something so beautiful about that that I couldn't explain to people, that it made me so emotional, because it's respect, but he's there. Mm-hmm. It's like it's that moment where like the fist is up, they're all up. And you see you feel his presence there. You know, right. There's something so beautiful about that.
Right. And the wisdom of not feeling like, you know, but we also need like a holograph. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
We just want to do this. Yes. We don't need to.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Which would have been a lot.
You know, hip hop to me does not have, and I think we've touched on this in show over the years, it doesn't always have the greatest track record in terms of artists as they age. And how do they maintain, whether you want to call it relevance, whatever term you want to apply to it, it's tough to be older in hip hop. It's tough to be middle aged. And there are certainly artists who have persevered, you know, in that direction, whether you're talking about your Jay-Z's or your Masta Aces, if you want to talk about someone who's more on the underground. I mean, it's people are out there grinding. But to me, what really stands out about this album is it is a tribe, you know, again, it was almost 20 years since the Love Movement had come out. And if it had been a poor album, whatever that might be, things fell flat, the lyrics weren't there, whatever, I think it would have disappointed people. I don't think it would have surprised people, only because we're not used to artists 20 years after their heyday still, you know, batting 1,000.
Sure.
And I think what's remarkable about this, and we can get into a conversation later about where does this rank amongst Tribe's album, I think that'd be kind of an interesting thing to take on. But regardless of where it ranks relative to their other product, it is still just very consistently them. Despite that span of time, I think is one of the greatest things you could say about it. And we wouldn't have really known that if not for this album, right?
Right.
It would have been, if Love Movement was our last memory of Tribe, you know, Trapped in Amber, not the best memory to have because it's not their best work.
Sure.
But this kind of gives you this, like, man, they still got it.
Yep. And I also thought, we can get to this a little bit later, that this was a good show of elder statesmen shouting out the young without jealousy or envy.
Mm.
I thought it was a really humble way of not saying, you know, we did this, we did that, going down the, you know, down the line of all
right.
their contributions,
right.
but very gently sort of passing the torch, but also the timing of it. We're passing the bar to you, passing the baton in 2016. This is the world you're inheriting.
They do that in Kids really beautifully, where there's even that line that they talk about how like, yeah, you see us and we walk around and we talk about paying bills, but we were once like you too.
Exactly.
Like, you know, and I love that because it's like, yeah, like, you know, yeah, we're worried about stuff, but we all went through that phase. We all had that. We were all like you at
exactly.
one point.
Brother kids, the grown-ups went on up. They stood on the corner like you once upon a time and probably felt like a loner. Smelled like a stoner. Snuck through Daytona.
So when they question you about who or who you ain't boning, complaining that you always moaning, never saying good morning, storming out my house and slamming doors like you paying bills. They've been through it too, though. They were kids like you.
Exactly.
I think that's amazing. And also going back to what you were saying about, like, yeah, a lot of people don't seem to age well in hip hop, but then I always think that the ones that do age are the ones that always had things to say.
Mm-hmm.
They always had things to say. Like, look at Missy Elliott. I love Missy Elliott. And you see her at the MTV Music Awards this year doing a hell of a performance that just is still so relevant. It seemed like all of her music could be out now.
Oh, totally.
You know what I mean? And,
timeless.
And that's when you know. Exactly. But there's so many times where, like, look, I grew up with hip hop. I love it. There's certain times where I hear an old song and I'm like, ooh, it didn't age well. You know, but when people have things to say in their own voice, when they, because you don't know if you have your voice. You're trying to figure out your voice throughout the entire career. And hopefully, you know, you never know you found it. Because
right.
it's not your job to tell. The people will tell you if you found it or not, or you connected with them. But, you know, for me, yeah, Tribe evolved in the way that Tribe would evolve. Tribe didn't evolve into the music industry. They just evolved into Tribe Now, which mm-hmm. was so important.
We will be back with more of our conversation with Cristela Alonso about A Tribe Called Quest. We got it from here after a brief word from some of our sibling Maximum Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
Yo, and we are back on Heat Rocks talking with Cristela Alonso about the 2016 Heater from A Tribe Called Quest. We got it from here. Thank you for your service.
Cristela, you entitled your memoir a mixtape memoir. And as Morgan and I have talked about on this show, that there is certainly an art to constructing a good mixtape. Part of it is because you can't go back and switch the order. This is not a Spotify playlist.
Yeah.
Like, once you've committed to that cassette, like, that is the commitment. And
yeah.
So we've been talking a lot about sequencing. And I think with mixtapes, this is especially crucial because depending on what you're making the mixtape for, really, who you're making it for, you think about, like, how do you want to open? How do you want to close? And so there's a lot of competing philosophies around how to make a good mixtape. So I'm going to ask you this, especially for that first few songs. Now, do you go big right out the gate, or do you kind of subtly ramp things up over the course of, let's say, the first 2, 3, 4 songs?
Oh, I do it slow because I need people to understand what we're going to get into. Like in my book, my playlist in my book starts out really slow. My first song is Boston's More Than a Feeling. Oh. And the last song is We the People.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for me, I like to start off slow because I think it shows an evolution more. I think you kind of go on a journey more because sometimes when you start out too heavy, you're kind of disappointed by what you follow up. Because that's right. The thing with music, right? If music is so subjective. If you love the first one and you think like the first one's strong and the second one, the follow-up, isn't as strong,
right.
You're already going to be out. You know what I mean? A lot of people, it's so weird how music is so powerful that it can be so dismissive. You know, it can be so dismissed by people. It's like if they don't like that flow, if you can't top the first one, they're out. That's why for me, I would rather go more consistent,
yeah.
Go in the slow and then lead to the end so that people know that they went through something. You know, it's like you got to go through something.
Sure. Sure.
I'd like to imagine an alternative present where instead of talking about Tribe, we picked Boston instead. And we're having this conversation about Boston. Shout out 1970s soft rock and AOR.
Absolutely.
You know, I can still write for that stuff. I'm not mad at that. That said, I do think this has been a more fruitful conversation, you know, in having Tribe.
Oh, man. So can we get into some of the hits on here,
Let's
though?
Let's do this.
I told this story. I did this conversation with Spotify for Artists, and I told the story. I'm not going to get into sample snitching because I know that's a thing, but I told the story of a young man that sent me, you know, a link to his SoundCloud and a couple of beats, you know, that he wanted me to consider, and one of them, he sampled Benny and the Jets, and he told me that because I was like, oh, you know. You're not going to be able to clear this sample. And he said, no, he said, this is like a really obscure, you know, Elton John song. And I was like, that ain't obscure.
Yeah, seriously.
I was like, everybody knows what Benny, that's like Elton
Biz
John
Marquee
101.
Flipped it, you know, mm-hmm. Come on now.
If you ain't know no other Elton John song, mm-hmm. Everybody knows that one. And so he got really in his feelings and stuff. He was hot. He was like, well, Mary J. Blige, you sampled this song. I was like, Elton was on the song with her. Like she had, she had permission, right?
She didn't sample. It
like
was
he
the
was
original.
There. You know what I'm saying? Like he provided some background. I was like, you're tripping. So one of my things that I was saying in the conversation is this is youth. Mm-hmm. Because the fact that one, he thought it was obscure. And two, I mean, I thought it was smart that he sampled it, but sort of silly that he thought that no one had heard of that song before. And we ended up talking it through, and he was like, well, my producer gave me this sample. So he hadn't really heard the song. He couldn't have. He was like 19. Mm. So it was nice to hear Benny and the Jets and Solid Wall of Sound, because I know these brothers are in their 40s. So they had permission. Yeah. I was mm-hmm. like, somebody hollered at Elton and was like, we need to use this. And it was, although I love the way this young guy sampled, because it was so chopped and screwed, that it took me a minute to be like, is that, because first I couldn't imagine. I was like, nah. But mm-hmm. in this, it was just wonderful to hear how they flipped it. And that's not my favorite moment on the album.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at the moment when I was like, oh my God, this is Benny and the Jets. And it's clear they cleared the sample. Loved it. So if we could hear a little bit of that. I mean, one of the things that I love is what they sampled from the song, mm-hmm. the part of the song that they sampled. It's a meticulousness that I always credit originally to Dilla, because it's the way that he used the samples, mm-hmm. it's how he used them and how many he mixed together. It was like a soup of samples, and this is what I liked about this. Although all across the album, I was like, where would Uma be on this? Where is mm-hmm. Dilla on this? Mm-hmm. But to me, this was Dilla-esque because it was meticulous on how they used
it. Yeah, it was really seamless, wasn't it? Like, yeah. I remember hearing it the first time, and I think it took me a second time to listen to it to actually realize to
clock that it was Elton. Like, yep. you felt it was part of the song.
That's it.
Like,
yeah, that's definitely. It. They finessed that. And so there's a lot to love about this album, but that is one of my favorite tracks on the album.
Early in the night when you pick out the music with a box in the band, kill a sound, man, music live and direct when it all goes down.
Like an idiot boy, you know when I fuck around.
Big tune make the world go around.
Make queer bring the sound boy crowd.
Them finna, where do we get this song?
One box in your face make a sound boy frown.
If I can just go on a brief tangent, because I was thinking too about the ways in which Tribes, the early part of their career, which is to say, you know, basically their career in the 90s, they were so influential in how a lot of people, including myself, certainly were turned on to just the art of sampling in general. And we've certainly have covered this in previously. And with this album in particular, and I think it probably has more to do with the fact that I'm just, you know, 20 years older, it didn't really matter to me as much, like, to have to hunt down, like, well, where did stuff come from? Though sure. I will confess, I certainly did look up what the sample was for Whatever Will Be, which is from
the Nairobi Sisters,
Promised Land. And I do kind of kick myself for not just copying it for $75 now that it's like a $300 45, ooh, which is, has everything to do with them sampling it. Like, you could have found, I mean, it was never like a cheapy, but the price has definitely elevated because Tribe used it.
Oh, man.
Hypersexualizing women, they ain't got the strong enough hold, so they built a prison, pumping false religions to all of these niggas' systems. Every voice devoid of the truth, come on.
Black women, black men, will be
like a billionaire investing in a nigga's dream.
Certainly, but to my point though, it wasn't something that I mean, maybe there were people who were neck deep in figuring out every single sample used on here. It just wasn't as important to me, which, again, maybe has just more to do with me or maybe more to do with just the culture of sampling, because there are no secrets. Like, the minute this album or any album drops with samples, everyone's uploaded stuff to, like, whosample.com.
And, oh, sure.
And mm-hmm. You got YouTube channels devoted exactly to this. So
sure.
The kind of hunt for it has now been crowdsourced in a way where I think in maybe it's more competitive for young people who do this, but as an old head, that act of discovery is not as magical when there is no discovery because people have already figured it out for
sure,
you.
Sure, sure. No, I feel that. I think I hold on to it and I revere it as an old head because it, at the point where I find myself sort of like dissolving into condescension, I say things like, and see, this is what this generation samples. You see how sophisticated these samples are? They're sampling Willy Wonka, okay? They're sampling the Nairobi Sisters. What you sampling, right? So it's sort of bragging rights, what they sample.
Right.
And so I hold on to that because it's like, you guys out here sampling, you know, I don't know, but if you're not sampling Boston, you know what I mean? If you ain't sampling Boston, then what are you doing?
It's like Ice Cube's It Was a Good Day, right? Like, right. You know what I mean? Like, I remember when I heard that, blew my mind.
Well, the Isis, yeah.
You know? Yeah, because they were just like, wait, what? Like, together? I remember being blown away from it, thinking, like, it's so good. When a sample's done well, you know where it comes from, but you don't even think about it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Which is so, you're right. Like, it's like, what are the people sampling now?
What
like,
are they, what you sampling now?
Yeah, exactly.
And then we all knew, it was legendary how deep, you know, Q-Tip's archives, his vinyl went. Mm-hmm. So I always thought like, well, this is probably from his own batch at home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't need producers to come in and really tell him,
right,
with the exception of maybe Dilla. But I thought, these are albums that we know that he rocks. And it just made me appreciate, you know, their samples more.
Yeah. Christelle, I'm interested to ask, as someone who grew up with Tribe, if you met someone who had never heard any of their music and you had to pick a song off of this album as an introduction to, well, this is who Tribe is.
Oh.
What track would that be?
Oh, man.
This is a Morgan Rhodes special.
That is a great question. Oh, let me see. I'll probably go with like, either Kids or This Generation.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's got a little bit, like, it's got the old sound, but it's modern, like, it's now.
Yeah.
But it does have that throwback where I think if you went back to the thing, you think it's familiar. Does mm-hmm. that make sense? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? I think those are probably one of those two.
Yeah. Arriving on impeccable grass, I'll be in my seat waiting for that law to pass.
Cash it. Been waiting for a Jets title since last. Such a Todd Bowles gangrene on that ass.
Magic Mike on the mic, David Blaine Douglas Henning.
Yeah, I think I have to agree. I think this would be a great
because
yeah.
it's got that music, like, because you know it's hip hop, but it's another thing. It's tribe hip hop. You know what I mean? It's yeah. got that. It's got that feel
that
where you're
vibe.
Like, yeah,
vibes
you know, like
stuff.
For me, like, yeah, yeah, that I think that's a good one.
And it's clever.
Yeah, it is.
It's clever. And you get to see, to me, that's Fife at his best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's got one of the best lines on there, which I think is.
You can't define us X, Y, Z, it's a generational elitist, happy, cheating, virtual think pieces.
You can't classify us. We are timeless. But it doesn't beat you over the head with it. It sneaks that in on you, and then it moves on to the next. You know, and they say to the next generation, show us what you're going to show us.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? What y'all got. You know, we've done as much as we could to get you to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's on you. And I just love the banter. I love the back and forth because it has a check the rhyme, you know,
esque-ness
right. to it, which I really, really love.
Yeah.
Morgan, you said earlier when we were talking about Solid Wall of Sound that wasn't your favorite. So let's get into this. What is the fire track off this album for you?
Ooh, the pressure. You ain't right. I like Conrad Tokyo.
Interesting yes. choice.
I don't know that that's the fire, but I love that, okay? It's between that and I also love Melatonin.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So those are my two favorites. I love what's being said in Conrad Tokyo. I love that they sampled the JBs, okay? I love that Gimme Some. I love Melatonin because it's the presence of women on the track. Mm-hmm. Although we have Jay Davies' little vocals behind enough,
mm-hmm.
but I like Marsha Ambrosius, mm-hmm. and I like Abby Smith, who's also known as Yeba.
Mm-hmm.
And that song also has my favorite moment. Conrad Tokyo, I love. I mean, I just love the message behind it. I love when it comes in the album because I'm not expecting it. I love the vibe. I love the BPMs. It just makes me want to wild out. I don't know what it is.
That's one of my favorite songs off of it, too.
Like, yeah.
And you're right. I was not expecting Conrad Tokyo.
Me like, either.
When I heard this album, I didn't look up any of the tracks. I just kind of, you know, you just,
yeah.
I listened to it. That came as a surprise. And the lyrics, I mean, the politicians, like, oh my God,
come on,
I love
baby.
It. I love it.
That's it.
Christian.
Conrad Tokyo, Sparrow, Pistachio, just unnatural. Dog is off sabbatical. Rather watch an exigent. Politician, policy, CNN and all this. Guan Yo, move with the fucker. Trump and an SNL hilarity. Troublesome times, kid. No time for comedy. Blood clots.
That one just makes me want to wild out. And then I'm like, I'm too old to be wilding out, but then I just still wild out anyway. But that's the one.
Christella, how about you?
Favorite? Oof. I mean, honestly.
It's got to be We the People,
it has
right?
to be We the People.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you ended your
my
book
chapter,
with it.
I ended my book with it.
Yeah.
And I look, to me, We the People, I think that We the People is such a brilliant use. We use the word inclusive a lot.
Yeah.
But we don't mean it. When we talk inclusive, we talk about our own community. Like, what about us? Mm-hmm. This song, I think that they did a great job of saying, look, there's a whole group of us that are in the same bubble. And we have been overlooked and we have been mistreated. And for me, like, it made me feel included, yet it made me feel aware of other communities that I don't pay attention to.
Sure.
Because it doesn't affect me, you know? And it's just, it's a human thing. But for me, like, the music's great. It starts off with that siren. So, like, right away, you're just like, what are we doing?
Right.
Because it follows Willy Wonka. So, like, right now, we're going from Willy Wonka to, like,
right.
you know, like what's this alert, right?
Right?
But also, it was just like, when they talk about like living in a fishbowl, like you're in a fishbowl. And it's true because like for me, there's certain cultures like, you know, like the Black culture. It's like I do feel like it's in a fishbowl where everybody looks at it and they want to be a part of it. And it's like, but yeah, do you really want to be a part of it?
Right.
Do you really want, like you pick and choose what you want from it.
And when you want to be a part of it.
Exactly.
And when you want to be a part
exactly.
of it.
You know, yeah. it's so funny how you can. You know, it's kind of like when I say that people like to tan. It's like, well, you can tan, but you don't have to. Then you don't have all the stuff that comes with the tan, with having the permanent tan.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So
sure.
for me, We the People, that was a great song. Where I mean, for me,
I don't know, personally in my career, I have felt like I get disregarded a lot too, you know, because being the first or one of the few to do something, you constantly get overlooked, which I think goes back to Missy. I think that Missy is such, she is a pioneer that people never gave it up for her. They don't honor her like they should because she's building the house while drawing the blueprint.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? So like for me, like we the people, that speaks to what this country, I'll be honest with you. We the people, I stopped doing stand-up in 2016. I took a break from doing stand-up. I devoted my life for the next 3 years traveling the country, helping out communities, helping out people that needed that were shell-shocked from the election because of this song. That's what I did.
Damn.
I left stand-up, and I decided to devote my life to the community because of this album. So like when I knew I was coming on here, I wanted this album. Because I know that the podcast is about an album that changes your life.
Yeah.
This song changed my life. Like, that's how important music is.
Sure.
That, like, this song, We the People, changed my life. You know? And I'm also diabetic. So it takes on a different feel for me.
Right. Yeah.
Because you kind of want to know what message you're leaving. You know? And it's that thing where, like, it was just perfect place, perfect time. So for me, We the People, when I tell people that are not familiar with Tribe that they should check out this album, I always tell them We the People.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, this generation, that's for Tribe overall.
Sure.
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you, that's vision. Like Tony Romo when he hitting with it. The Tribe be the best in a division. Shaheed Muhammad cut it with precision. Who can come back years later, still hit the shot? Still I'm trying to move you off the fucking block.
Well, I wish I had offered my fire track before because I can't follow that.
Well, I mean, look, no, no, I mean, I'm the guest.
Yes,
I'm leaving.
Of course.
Indeed. Indeed. What you got,
yeah,
baby?
I did have trouble narrowing this down because I think the two other songs that were runner-ups were either going to be Space Program because I just think it's such an important way of opening the album, or The Donald, which is just an important way to close it.
Yep.
But for me, I always think of the fire track as being, if I'm just going to pluck something off here that I just want to bump eternal, to use your term, Morgan.
Bump eternal.
It's got to be Black Spasmodic. Christian.
Yo, y'all ready? Yo, fight. You ready?
So this song, number one, offers my favorite moment, which is just how it opens. I think it opens just fire. I mean, just that rhythm bump. And I love it when hip-hop artists sample from reggae. And I'm by no means the deepest, like, dance hall or reggae head. I'm not a fan of Ragamuffin. If we're going to take things back to the 90s,
sure.
Like, that was not my sound.
Sure.
But there's just something about a really good rhythm when you use it properly. And this album has at least two of those instances, right? Including this one, where just like that, bounce on this is just so infectious, and to hear Fife at his like pugilistic best is just such a gift and such a gem. So
yep.
For me, this is the fire track.
Puck made me want to see this nigga in person. Third song in, motherfuckers dispersing. Only to realize, Donna Juice in the building.
Yeah.
Big tune, this for men, women, and children. Back on my bullshit, muscle, let me kill them.
Who kept up a buzz the whole calendar.
Black.
Used to sell drugs out the Challenger.
It's tough on here, because to me, there's like 16 heaters on here. But I love that. I love the rhythm, as you mentioned. And I love the patois that you hear all over the album.
Yes.
Between Busta and Fife going back and forth. And it adds just something just really hot to the album. So I'm with you there. I'm with you.
You had teased your favorite moment earlier. So what is your favorite moment?
My favorite moment is on Melatonin. And it's the point at which Abby Smith starts singing. And I love the way that her voice, alongside Marsha's voice and also Q-Tip's voice, end up gelling together.
So many thoughts in my mind. Making it very hard to undermine. Guess I should take one, just one.
This one's for the girls that all know me.
Just one.
This one's for the day when I'm missing.
Just one day.
This one, take it, take me.
So let's get into a dangerous conversation here.
All right then.
Where does this album rank amongst Tribe's LPs?
Oh, man.
And I'm going to start this one off.
Shots fired.
I got it at number four because it's, I mean, for all the reasons that we've talked about, you know, the timing of it, what it meant, incredible in so many ways. But if I'm just listening to them as albums, right, cut away from social historical context a little bit, it's going to be better than Love Movement, which is just,
yeah.
I'm really glad this is the last Tribe album because... I don't think the Love Moment was terrible. There's some decent moments on there, but it's just an album I never find myself wanting to go back to. But this is not gonna. We got it from here. It's not gonna overtake Low End. It's not gonna overtake Midnight. It's not gonna overtake People's Instinctive. Or actually, no. I miscounted. I said put it fourth. Actually, I would also put it behind Beats, Rhymes, and Life, which is, I think, an album that a lot of fans were not a fan of back when it first dropped. I think that album has actually aged really, really well. It's so much better than I think a lot of people gave it credit for, even though at the time what they wanted was like Midnight Marauders Part 2, and this took things in a different direction, partly because of Dilla's influence on it.
Yeah.
But I think because of Dilla's influence, Beats, Rhymes, and Life sounds amazing now. So I would actually have to put this album, I guess, at number five, and then Love Movement coming in like at a very distant six.
Fair enough. So the Love Movement was going to just be dead last, no matter what.
Well, unless this album had just been a total flop,
sure,
which it's not. And though I think I am giving it a boost because of, again, when it came out. I think divorced from that, I don't know where it would rank relative to that. But Love Movement just doesn't have a lot of magical moments on there, and this album does for me.
Sure.
Yeah. How about for you?
I love you so much, man, but I hate this question, but I'm going to work through it. I'm going to process it.
It's how we do.
It is. It is. I cannot... It's very hard for me because I attach memories to music and I attach memories to albums.
Of course.
Sometimes the preciousness about what was going on in my life.
Yeah.
Midnight Marauders came at a great time for me, but to me it was like a party album. I was in college. Don't do the math. Like I said, I'm not going to get into any numbers, but I was in college. And so it'll always, just the feeling of when I first heard Electric Relaxation.
Oh, my God. Award tour. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
That's always going to be precious, okay? So period. And heretofore, I would have said Low End Theory. But for me, it's always going to be, number one for me is going to be Midnight Marauders. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because Low End to me is classic material.
Sure.
But Midnight just gave me a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is going to be Thank You for Your Service. We got it from here.
Wow.
Because of some of the things Christelle is saying, what I needed at the time.
Yeah.
In 2016, any individual one of those losses that you mentioned was just collapsed me.
Right.
It doesn't make sense to lose Prince in the same year that you also lose George Michael, to lose Sharon Jones. It's you can't imagine that. And then on top of that, homeboy wins as president. And so I like the things that they were saying, and I respect it so much because this album to me is a teachable moment. How to close a show, borrowing the metaphor, how to age gracefully, and what to leave behind. And this to me is, if this was the last album, I don't need any more. Like you were saying, had they not done this, had they just stopped at Midnight Marauders, that would have been fine. But to end this way after so much time pushes this above because of the feelings that I attached to this.
Yeah.
What I needed in 2016.
I hear you.
And the feeling of sitting with some of these songs knowing we were going to have this conversation, I thought, damn, I don't feel like I missed anything. If I go back to Midnight Marauders, it takes me right back to that year. But here, it takes me back to how I felt and what I needed. And so that pushes it above. Do I think it's a better album than Low End Theory? No. But it makes me feel something.
I feel you. Yeah. How about you, Christelle?
I actually, I'm on the same one. Midnight Marauders is always going to be my number one.
Number
one. Because for me, Midnight Marauders, if it hadn't been for that album, I wouldn't know Tribe. Like, so for me, it's like, you can never rank it higher. But... thank you for this. Thank you for, I mean, this is gold. And for me, Low End Theory was, again, I got pop culture late. So Tribe had already been a thing when I discovered Tribe. So it was weird to like go and I heard songs out of order. So, you know, it was really weird to find out the evolution. Mm-hmm. You know, like for me, we got what we got, yeah. You know? So, but for me, this album, Midnight Marauders will always be number one
number
because
one.
That was it. But yeah, like, and I struggled because I almost wanted to say three because Low in Theory, I mean, really is
That's
musically,
it.
I mean, like, it's just, it's classic. But I'm here on this podcast because right. I love this
right.
album.
Sure.
So
of course.
It's got to be number two. Like,
sure.
You know,
fair
hands
enough.
Down.
Sure.
Fair enough.
I wanted to ask you because you wrote about this.
Yeah.
You know, going into this, when you were writing about this, you said you wanted to, but knowing that this or feeling like this was their last album, like what sort of emotions did it pull out of you writing about? Because this is not your average review,
yeah.
right?
Well, it's funny because I had the same experience or similar experience much more recently writing about the new Gangster album, one of the best yet, which very similar to this. I mean, it had been over 15 years since the previous Gangster album. Obviously, Guru's gone in the same way that Fife is gone. And it's one of those things where it's not that it makes the albums, I mean, the term often gets used like review proof or critic proof. I mean, you can still engage with it. You could try to break it down on a formal level. But for me, what I'm more interested in, especially these days, is just what is the response? What is the kind of emotional thing that these albums evoke from us? You know, nostalgia, of course, being part of it. But also, what does it say to like where we are in the moment? I think sitting down with it, knowing that it was like the last album, I didn't feel sad about that. I mean, I felt sad about Fife being gone.
Yeah.
But as I was sort of alluding to, they didn't need to do this.
Yeah.
Right?
No
one, I mean, yeah, people were asking for a Tribe album for years, but this was not something that they did because a label told them to do it or because they needed the check. They did it because they wanted to do it, because they knew perhaps Fife's time on this earth was short. And that if that was the case, they had to squash beef and they had to do it for themselves. But they also it was a gift to us. And so for that, I thought it was kind of as perfect as you could ask for as a last album.
Let's progress the story just a little bit. Malik, I would treat you like little brother that would give you fits. Sometimes overbearing, though I thought it was for your benefit. Despite all the spasms, you cinematically documented. The one thing I appreciate, you and I, we never pretended. Rhymes, we provided out. Hard times, fight it out. Gave grace, face to face, made it right. And now you riding out.
We ask our guests often if you had to describe the album in three words, what would they be?
Power over ignorance.
Mm. I always like it when our guests come with phrases.
Bars in here.
Yeah. If our listeners really enjoyed listening to us talk about this Tribe album, what should they follow that up with next?
Under normal circumstances, I would have a fresh pick, you know, something else similar. But based on this conversation, I'd say if you like this, just go back to the catalog of Tribe. Just go back. Go back to Midnight Marauders. Go back to Low End Theory. Go back to People's Instinctive. Go back to Beats and Rhymes so that you can appreciate this last one even more. Mm-hmm. So that you can see, you know, the development over time of them, and so that you can see the true spirit of Tribe wasn't lost on this album. Short of that, I would say, as a companion piece, go back and listen to Dilla Donuts.
Mm.
It is another last album. It's another great assembly of samples from a man who knows that his days are limited and that he picked the perfect number of tracks to coincide with what he knew was imminent. Mm. And you can also see the architect of some of Tribe Called Quest, really beautiful, beautiful work. So it's like listening to one of their cousins and also one of their producers and the architect of this whole sample thing. So that would be my decision, my pick.
So I already teased this a moment ago, but I would suggest people check out Gangstar's One of the Best Yet. I do think that, I mean, the comparison is very easy because these are two golden era groups.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long hiatus between. I think it also makes for an interesting contrast for reasons that I'd been alluding to a moment ago, which is that the main difference is that in this case, Guru's lyrics, and I don't know the full backstory, but they definitely sound like they were recorded probably back in maybe 05, 06, there's been some time, and so unfortunately he's been dead since 2010.
Yeah.
There was no opportunity for Premier to be able to get Guru back into the studio and record stuff that would have spoken a little bit more to the moment.
Yeah.
And it's not that Gangstar was ever the most topical artist. I mean, they weren't really referencing current events necessarily in a lot of their songs. But I do think that the key difference between this album and that album, as similar as they are in some ways, is just the fact that, again, Guru wasn't here in 2018 or 2019 to be able to put together the album. But that said, it's kind of amazing that we have a new Gangstar album to listen to that sounds like what you want a Gangstar album to sound like, which is, I think, in the same way that we responded to the Tribe album. So I think it's just, yeah, for 90s kids like me, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Like, you're going to listen to that Gangstar album. But if you haven't yet, you know, if you're not a 90s kid, then, yeah, you should go check it out. And yeah, just kind of think about what works in both albums, maybe what doesn't work for one or the other because of some of the differences in the circumstances.
We all know that the game has changed. It's crazy out here. Rap's got a bad name. Think about it. What if Bling never happened and the true artists were getting rich from rapping? Word to God, some should give. Let's delete the politics so real hip-hop can live.
Christelle, what do you think people should listen to after this album?
I'm going to go old school. Yes. Because Tribe is more than a feeling. I would say Tupac. Mm. And I would probably recommend, I think it's The Greatest Hits, because I want to say The Changes was released after he passed, I'm sure. But like, to me, Tupac and Tribe go hand in hand in talking about the world that they were living in a way that even if you hear it now, especially if you hear Tupac now, same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Same. It's like same world, different day.
Sure.
And for me, I think that if you like the message of this album from Tribe, then you will love going back and listening to Tupac, because it's just different perspective about very similar things. That it actually, once I listen, like if you listen to Tupac, I think you would be curious to see what he would have to say right now.
Sure.
Which I think allows itself to kind of have like a before and after, I think, a then and now, I think.
Sure.
Two distant strangers, and that's how it's supposed to be. How can the devil take a brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played as kids, but then it changed. That's the way it is. Come on, come on.
That's just the way it is.
That will do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Christelle Alonso. You have just wrapped up the book tour. What are you working on now?
The Spanish version of my book is coming out December 10th, which, you know, so I'm doing everything, but now in Spanish, promoting it. But also, you know, it's funny. People keep asking me, they always ask me if I'm ever coming back with a TV show or what I'm doing next. And I always tell people, I don't know. I think that a lot of people try to create content because they feel like they have to. We were talking about that, like the Tribe album. And it's, for me, I like to have something to say.
Yeah.
You know,
not just for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, because I think that people can sense it. The audience knows when you mean it and when you're just doing it.
Right.
So for me, the book was a big thing that was so special to me. And the tour was, this tour is actually my first tour since 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So I recorded my Netflix special in August of 2016.
Mm.
So I stopped doing stand-up in 2016. I just started this tour in October. It's my first time back to stand-up. So this was a big undertaking. It was 40 cities in 3 months.
Mm.
And it was my way of saying that I was back.
Yeah.
And now it's different. It's a weird thing because I'm mentally in a different spot right now where now I don't know what's next.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have choices.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is one of the best things you can say. I almost feel guilty saying that to people when they're like, what are you working on now? I haven't chosen yet. I haven't decided yet. It seems, you know, it seems very indulgent, but it's the truth. It's like,
flaunt
you know.
It if you got it, though.
That's it. That's it. It ain't tricking if you got it. But up next for You Gotta Be a mixtape. You know, you coming out here talking about hits, Boston and such.
Yeah.
I think you need to get a mixtape together. No, that's got to be next up for you.
I should do it, man. I
absolutely
should do it. Oh, man.
Curate something for the people.
Where can people find you online?
Instagram and Twitter, Cristela9, the number 9, because Cristela was taken by people that don't use their accounts, which is so frustrating.
Eight people in front of you.
Well, you know, there was a Cristela 1, there was a Cristela and a Cristela 2, and I was like, screw it, I'm just going to do 9. I'm like, I'm safe. And my website's CristelaAlonzo.com with Cristela with no H, please.